This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, you're with Rachel Dore. This is the Te Manawa Show, and today I'm with Rob Milden, who is part of the comms team show, the comms team at Te Manawa. Hello, Rob. Lovely to have you.
Yeah, kia ora koutou. Happy to be here, Rachel. So I am the communications coordinator. So there's two of us on the comms team. There's the comms and marketing manager, and then me. I handle the quite a lot of things, really. I handle all of our social media accounts, so our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram, and also I take a lot of the photographs that we do for our various events around the museum. I am not the official Te Manawa photographer, but a lot of the photos that you'll see on our website and in our publications are taken by me. I populate our website with content, whether it's posting events, researching and writing blogs about different topics. You can go into the stories section of our website and find all kinds of things about our items from our collection, about events that have come through, about aspects of different exhibitions. So, for example, when we had our dinosaur encounter exhibition at the end of 2016 and start of 2017, I picked a dinosaur for every month that it was there and wrote a little bit about them, you know, sort of fun facts about Tyrannosaurus or fun facts about Struthia mimus. And
so there's sort of news about Te Manawa that you kind of, it's updates and regular news on the website
because there's always some event coming up, you mm-hmm. know, whether it's a one-off or a more – so, for example, last week we finished our series of laser tag at the museum events or an ongoing event like, say, Santa's Cave, which is kind of a mix between an event and an exhibition, because there's an exhibition there and we have different things happening within it, whether it's seniors visits or evening – family evenings in Sanders Cave, in addition to the sort of the general 10 until 5 opening hours. The best place to find out about those is on our Facebook page because that's where I'm most commonly posting and it has our broadest audience.
So the comms team and in your role particularly, Rob, you're the link between what goes on behind the scenes at Te Manawa and reaching the community.
Yeah, that's right. At the moment, I'm working on a piece. I went out with Prue Pym, who's our accessibility and inclusion coordinator, and she also runs the Museum in a Box, which is sort of like a mini exhibition mm-hmm. that fits into. She's fitted into an old leather suitcase. And she takes it out to retirement villages and I believe also from time to time schools. People who can't easily make it into the museum, so she takes the museum to them.
How wonderful. And, of course, that would encourage other people with perhaps more mobility to come in and explore what's possible at Te Manawa.
Yeah, that's right. Outreach. Yeah, so I went with her on one of her trips out and sort of got to see her in action. And that was quite a spread that they had, that they'd laid out. Everybody had their old wedding dresses of various styles and made from various materials.
You mean the people where she went, they actually contributed to the
Yes.
whole. How wonderful.
Yeah, it was very much a sort of a community effort. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely.
And you get to go and meet them and
I did not
everyone
know
up there
about
and
this.
Hear their stories.
Wow.
And it's not the first time I've been out with her. She went out to talk about the Queen's visit in 1953, 54, and the people there talked about, because they were students back then and lived, you know, reasonably in the middle of town, and suddenly the Queen is here, and so they got to sort of talk about their experiences of that. And it's great to sort of say, to sort of supplement those little exhibitions with people's memories and what they have to say as well.
Of course, and it must stimulate so much in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just, this takes Tamanua to a whole new level that I hadn't realised. So you work in closely with Prue Pym on these things as well?
Not necessarily just closely just with her. I work with sort of everybody who's got a part of the Tamanua story to tell. We recently had a new collection item come in that Cindy Lilburn told us all a story about at our staff meeting.
Are you allowed to tell?
Well, it is it's a very interesting story behind the item. The item itself is just really a milestone in the life of the character who brought it to New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a New Zealand chap who was a serial disappearer. and running away was sort of his hobby, because if he didn't like something, he was out.
Right.
So he was signed up to his parents signed him up to the 1910s equivalent of the Spirit of Adventure, and he disappeared from that. And then he vanished off the face of the earth. And then in 1915, his brother found him at Gallipoli.
Oh, wow.
Serving
what a story.
With the Australian infantry.
Has anyone written a book about this?
I don't think that they have.
Mm.
And then he was invalided out because he got sick, and he disappeared from hospital. And he ended up on the Western Front, where he was charged with insubordination and drunkenness. And he, wherever they sent him, he kept disappearing.
Wow.
He eventually ended up back in Australia. And Australia got sick of him and tried to send him to New Zealand, but New Zealand wasn't paying attention, and so he hopped back on a boat to Australia the day after he arrived. It took them two goes to get him back over here permanently. But on his way back from the war, he stopped in Cape Town and bought an ostrich egg, a painted ostrich egg.
Ah, yes.
And
yes.
So now that is part of the collection.
And it's not just about the painted ostrich eggs, because there must have been lots. It was quite a thing to do in those days. Collect curiosities and
yes.
paint them or carve them. But that story is part of a story.
Yeah, and you can read the full story of Jack Asher on our website. Because I've no doubt left out some or forgotten to include some particular incident in his very, very eventful life.
I think this is what makes artifacts so juicy. It isn't just the artifacts themselves.
Mm,
it's the stories around them, and the fact that you're part of sharing those stories and bringing them to life.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of what Tamanua is about, isn't it?
Yes. On the 30th of November, our Santa's Cave opens for the year, for the end of the year again. It will be the 101st time that the cave has, or the 101st year that the cave has opened. And last year, I don't know if it's going to be repeated this year, but last year we had items from the collection from around 1918 on display there. So,
wow.
So there's always these sort of connections to be drawn between all the different items that we have.
Where was the Santa? I have to ask this now, although I'm bound to interview someone about the Santa's Cave. You'll have to tell me about that. But the story about where it first began, you said 100, over 100 years. Was it in one of the department stores? Or?
Yes, in Collinson and Cunningham in 1918. Because, of course, New Zealand was still reeling not only from the end of the First World War, but from the influenza epidemic.
Right. They needed something jolly.
Yes. And the chap who proposed it, he'd come over to New Zealand in 1910 and had tried to get the idea off the ground earlier. But it didn't really sort of find its full fruition until 1918, when it was just the thing.
Just the thing, indeed. Yeah, 1910, there was a bit of a depression, wasn't there, in the late 1800s that sort of took place before the First World War. It was a bit of a slump, so didn't want to do it, probably, I imagine.
Not enough shillings to go around.
There weren't enough shillings for frivolities. They're busy building a nation on the smell of an oily rag. Yes, wow, lots of stuff. So what else does the comms team, yourself, what else do you do there in terms of, I'm using this word, the link.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have to attend all these different meetings and the brainstorming sessions, or do they just come to you and say, this is what we've decided?
No, they'll come to me and say, here's what's going on. Although I do work quite closely with our events team. It's a two-person team. And they not only do the sort of the day-to-day events like exhibition openings and sort of smaller scale stuff, but also the quite large scale events, like the laser tag that I mentioned earlier this year.
And you've got something later this month, isn't it? Not just the laser tag, zombie things.
That was last Friday.
Oh, was it? Mm. Oh, is that the laser tag?
Yes.
I thought it was a slightly different thing.
Well, it's daylight savings over now, so it's a little trickier to do things like that. Although the laser tag people, they come over from Whanganui and they do daylight events. I think it's better for us if it's in the evening because we get to bring out our coloured floodlights and present the interior of the museum in a way that people don't usually get to see it because, of course, you come in during the day and it's just, it's a building interior.
Yes.
But at night, when it's lit up with orange and red and green and blue, it becomes this completely different space. And also quite handily, some of the bright street lights outside shine in and provide a little bit more colour, a bit more atmosphere.
Yes. Ah, so that's I've missed that then. Mm. Not that I was going to go, but so the events team does all that kind of thing, and in terms of actually making it a lively place with all that, so they connect with you.
Yes, yeah.
And tell you all about it, and you write it up.
I'll create an event, make sure everybody is aware of it. Although a lot of that is word of mouth, people. Going to one and then telling all their friends, oh my goodness, that was incredible. Because our first one was was last year, and it we did all right, but everybody said because it was on a Saturday, and everybody said if you did it on a Friday, that would be so much better. And so just that one little bit of information that you can't really tell that that's going to be a factor until you do it once and people let you know, no, on a Friday's better. Oh, is it? Okay, awesome. And so we did it on a Friday and the next one on a Friday and it sold out. So
wow.
And they continue to sell out.
Mm.
So clearly there's a thirst to see that kind of event or to attend that kind of event in our space.
You've just brought up an interesting topic. So if there is any feedback from the community at all about any of the things at Te Manawa, does that sort of end up on your desk?
Sometimes. There are forms, formal forms you can fill out at the at the front desk, where you can tick boxes to indicate when you came and if you came from out of town and what kind of little three lines where you can say what kind of experience you had. But I also field messages on Facebook, often just inquiries about upcoming events and how to book, how many people, just general inquiries, and often sometimes about the just about the museum itself,
right,
or about one of our exhibitions.
So, in one of the things that I've found out while interviewing people about Te Manawa, the team is actually quite small. It's quite a small team for such a big operation, mm-hmm, and such a busy operation.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the team, is it 50% of the team work half-time, part-time? Is that true?
Ooh, I don't have the exact numbers on that.
But many do. Many work part-time.
There are a number of us, certainly, and you know, front desk staff certainly tend to be on a rotating. Yeah,
well, yeah.
I don't know the full extent of it.
Right, right. But that's interesting,
mm,
because it actually means that things run quite tightly too. But it's a lot of work. It's a heavy workload.
Oh,
that's
it is.
The point I'm making.
Mm.
It's a heavy workload on a very, very busy team. And very creative team, full of creative ideas and creative responses to what the need. You've got to keep the pace of interest up in the community.
For example, at the end of 2017, we got the BrickFlix exhibition, which was – and when I heard about this, I thought this was going to be dioramas of movie posters rendered in Lego. And – it wasn't quite. It was photos of dioramas rendered in Lego. And that was the whole of the exhibition. And we sort of looked at it and went, oh, this is going to need a bit more to spice it up. And the exhibitions and production team just did the most amazing job creating this extra supplemental material. We called in, we borrowed models that the Lego Users Group or the Lego Builders Group had made. We bought a lot of Lego and had custom built build station, like tables where we had these big bins of Lego that people could just stand and or sit and grab all these things. And we had movie making stations where people could make their own stop motion animations or short films. Just with the stuff that they made, and this was entirely additions that our team made to the original exhibition. The original exhibition almost ended up being kind of secondary, you know, lining the walls, provided a bit of atmosphere, a bit of background. The real draw was coming in to play with Lego all summer.
How amazing! And so that I'm just looking at the wonder of that, because that must have actually meant pulling out all the stops. And
it was. Yeah,
creative meetings and brainstorm. I love brainstorming. Amazing stuff comes out of it.
We were a little lucky. We got to use the general framework that was left over from the Top Twins exhibition. So the general the floor structure and the different areas that had been in Top Twins, we were able to adapt those. So we didn't have to completely clean Top Twins out and then come up with an entirely new thing. We were able to
adapt.
And that made it a bit easier.
Mind you, that's part of creativity.
Oh, certainly.
Being able to adapt to circumstances.
Knowing what to not throw away.
Right. So is there some aspect of your job that you particularly love?
I got to say it's quite a big rush. When you throw something up on Facebook and think, oh, you know, this is just a post about an event or what have you, and you come back the next day and find it's reached 10,000 people, doesn't happen too often. It tends to be for our big exhibition. 2016 was a really big year because we had both dinosaurs and Frida Kahlo's photos, and so that was. That was a very exciting time to be around, because not only do you get to write about the stuff and see the immense interest that's coming in, but then people arrive and you get to photograph them. We had someone in Wellington had them this amazing idea called the Frida Carload.
Oh, yes.
And they would gather some friends and bring them up and see the exhibition. And it just snowballed and snowballed and snowballed. And so eventually the Frida carload became more like a Frida busload and everybody came in costume and all the sort of dressed up, and we made a little video about it. Well, somebody made a video about it. I don't think it was us, but yeah, it was, and that was tremendous to sort of see that great response. Yeah. So seeing people really, really sort of get their teeth into something that you've put all the effort into promoting, because often, sometimes, you know, you are just crossing your fingers and hoping that whatever you've put out there lands.
Yeah.
Hoping that Facebook deigns to show it to people, because you never know.
Really?
Well, yeah, it can be a bit of a coin toss.
Yeah.
Whether Facebook's algorithm goes, oh yeah, we'll show this to people, or nah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got to really keep on top of all that.
Mm.
Wow. Wow. I'm actually so impressed, and I have to admit, I'm quite in love with Te Manawa since I started talking to some of the people concerned.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. So what would you like to see happen between Te Manawa and the community? What are some of the things you'd like to envisage developing or creating?
I'm not usually on the fully creative side. I can only really make recommendations as to how things could perhaps be done to make it easier, or to make it more, to give it more bite.
Yeah,
in the area of promoting it. Often these things just arrive by themselves, because photos of people playing laser tag in a brightly and colourfully lit museum kind of do all the heavy lifting. You know,
yeah.
People see that and go, oh my goodness, wow, that looks incredible, and they want to come along to the next one. We run something like that, and one of the most common questions we get is, when's the next one? We had just the other week, we had a spotlight event, you know,
mm-hmm.
torch-based hide-and-seek in the museum, and that pretty much sold out. We got almost 250 people in.
Wow.
And yeah, everybody wanted to know when the next one was.
In fact, I was wondering whether you post that sort of post-event stuff on Facebook.
Yes. With this sort of thing where I'm always taking photos.
Mm.
I wasn't at the spotlight one, so I'm not at everything.
You can't be everywhere. No. Yeah.
But for something big like a laser tag or our annual After Dark events, because that was sort of our flagship evening event. And in 2015, we had 500 people.
What does After Dark mean?
Well, it's just we transform the museum in the middle of winter. We have a whole lot of different activities that could be based around an exhibition that we've got on at the time, or just general cool stuff to come in and do at night.
Yeah,
so it could be painting rocks with glow-in-the-dark paint under UV light. It could be making cool goop with a visiting scientist.
Right.
It could be as simple as just going on a kind of a scavenger hunt through the museum with a UV torch,
right,
and to try and find the UV stuff. That's because in 2015 our big exhibition was Sunlight, which was a Te Manawa developed science exhibition, and part of the thing we had there was with ultraviolet light, and we had a lot of ultraviolet torches. We ran a UV scavenger hunt. So it was completely invisible unless you had one of the special torches.
Wow!
But every year there's been something that we've run it. There's been something different. So there's always something for everybody.
So what about in the summer? Here we are on a cold, sunny day.
Mm.
It was when I left home. Thinking about the summer, what have you got?
Well, this summer we've got obviously the Sanders Cave, which is a yearly staple. And people never get tired of it.
Mm.
And I think last year we had record-breaking visitor numbers through Santa's Cave.
Is it slightly different each time?
There was a big effort last year to renew the exhibition for the centenary. Because, of course, yeah, it was the 100th year since it had opened. We received a very generous donation from the community that let us fully renovate the carousel, And the carousel is, I think it's the it's one of the only, if not the only, original or contemporary object from 1918 that was in the exhibition at that time.
Wow.
A lot of things like the monkey band and the elves are from the 60s. And there are some other exhibits that are a little older than that. But by no means is everything in the exhibition 100 years old. And also this year we have an exhibition coming from MOTAT up in Auckland called Mighty Small, Mighty Bright.
Ah, yes.
Which is it's a science exhibition. It's really great to have a science exhibition over the summer again. It's heavily interactive and it deals with the science of the small. So nanotechnology, light and photons and fiber optics perhaps, small things like that. So it's something you might usually have to look at under a very powerful microscope. But that will be with us.
It's on late, for a few
it'll
months,
be with us,
isn't it?
It'll be with us over the summer.
Yes. And what about some of the other things that short-term things you've got over the summer?
Well, we always run a school holiday program,
right.
a full school holiday program for
medals should be given out to people who run school holidays programs.
Yes, absolutely. our learning team is in the middle of the school holidays at the moment, and they are running flat tack to sort of provide these interesting and engaging programs. The school holidays are always an interesting time. At the museum, because we've got a mix of free drop-in programs, so you can just show up and join in, and those are often all ages. Some programs are aimed at specific brackets of kids, like some might suit the very young kids, others might be for between 5 and 8. The robotics sessions are always hugely popular.
Ah, yes.
And they're for the older kids.
I need to interview. That's one of the sessions we'll have on the Tamanua show.
Right, right.
Is talking about the robotics, because a lot of adults don't understand. When I say adults, okay, adults who are over the age of 40 don't always understand what's involved with the robotics, and it's become almost a sport.
Oh, yes.
Hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. There
it's
are,
a worldwide sport.
Yes, definitely. The international body or the international manufacturer, VEX, or VEX-IQ, has challenges.
Mm.
Like, here's what our – are they monthly or quarterly? But
are
anyway, it has – here's the challenge, and you have to – your group or your school or has to see if they can overcome that challenge. And they are quite involved. It's almost like you're getting your robots to do a sport sort of thing, where you have to engineer them to navigate a space and pick something up and take it over there.
Sort of like an obstacle course for these things. And so the operators, it's not just the build of the little machine, little robot, but how easily and how dexterous the operators are to make these robots.
Oh, sure.
Work.
I mean, I've never driven one. So I don't know the ins and outs of how hard it is to drive one of these things.
But they're
certainly made to be as accessible as possible.
Yeah,
so,
a bit more complicated than a remote control car.
Oh, definitely. because you could be forgiven for looking at these robots and thinking that's Lego, because they look a lot like Lego.
It's a cross between Meccano and Lego, don't they?
Yeah, and you can just kind of snap them together. Yeah, there are certainly some metal bits that you for like axles and things that you put together. And then you drive them with what looks like a PlayStation controller.
Yeah.
But they've got all the special robot buttons on them to make them do the things.
It's pretty amazing.
Oh, certainly.
Especially
when
you see youngsters doing it, it's pretty incredible.
And it's not only an exercise in encouraging interest in the science and engineering and that. It's an exercise in solving a problem. Here's a box of bits.
Mm.
Make it do this thing. Put it together and make it do this thing.
I know it's fantastic for young people because, as you say, it goes beyond just doing, it's not just what you see people, young folk doing, it's what it does to their brains in terms of creatively problem solving and making creativity work.
Yeah, yeah. So earlier this year we had the great ball contraption build day in which school teams came to Tamanawa and they spent the day making these contraptions. And the brief was, you know, I think move a ball from one place to another.
Using contraptions.
Using contraptions. And so here are all these kids working at these wildly different looking devices.
Yeah.
You know, some approached it one way, others approached it another way. And it was really interesting to sort of watch the different thought processes ticking over and seeing how they
it's
would get
from A
to B.
It's a joy when you see that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was really good.
So in a way, Tamanawa is a center for discovery.
Yes.
Because you can discover art, you can discover heritage, mm-hmm. you can discover technology. And that is for everyone, people of all ages.
Yeah, yeah.
So it isn't just about going and seeing something in a passive way, although you can.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go and just sit quietly in a room full of artwork, you can go to Gallery 5 or wherever and sit there and look at artwork if that's what you want to do. But if you want to discover something, whatever way discovery reaches you, you can go and have that encounter
certainly.
At Tamanawa.
Yeah, certainly. And at the moment we've got our Colin McCann centenary exhibition on.
That's finishing soon, isn't it?
1st of December.
Oh,
finishes,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So because the 1st of August was the 100th, would have been his 100th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got all of our McCanns from the Tamanawa Art Collection. There are 18 of them,
mm-hmm.
and we put them on display. There's also a couple of portraits of him done by Toss Wollaston.
Oh, yes.
But we wanted to emphasize with the exhibition, instead of just going, here's Colin McCann, he's great, mm-hmm. don't you know,
mm-hmm.
we wanted to make sure people knew why, you know, what is it about him?
Mm.
Why is he one
Give
of
him some context.
Yeah, why is he one of New Zealand's most lauded and iconic artists? And so we made a deliberate effort to make sure that when people can look at a painting and then there's a panel that puts it in the sort of the context of New Zealand's art history. Mm, you know, why is this different? Why was this considered so groundbreaking, or so unique? And that's an effort that's been duplicated up and down the country. Like lots and lots of McCann retrospectives and surveys being done all over. In fact, the newsroom toured New Zealand to all the different places, including us, and looked at the different ways they were presenting their McCanns and the kind of information they were putting out there. Because really, I mean, it's to our advantage if people have a deeper understanding of this. It's not just for some art critic or for some person to come in and go, oh yes, this is McCann, this is wonderful. We want everybody to be able to figure that.
And actually to access it. And I think that's what putting it in a context and bringing the social history and the art history of it together. So people actually, as I say, it's about discovery.
Mm-hmm.
We have just about run out of time for however length of time the Tamanawa show is going to be on. What else have you got in your notebook?
Well, since we're in the art gallery at the moment, we have, interestingly, normally the gallery one is a space dedicated to a single show. But we've got two shows in there at the moment. There's the Colin McCann that I mentioned, and next door to that is something called Controlled Environment Laboratory. And it's an exhibition by artist and curator Melissa Lang, and it tells the story of a small research institute that was here in Palmerston North, out where the Crown Research Institutes are now. And it had its genesis back in the 1950s, But it was a while before it could get built, before it was finally built. And it began in 1973 and closed in 2013. And this exhibition sort of looks at the research that it did, the effects that it had.
What sort of research were they doing?
It was on climate and plants. There was a lot of plant-based stuff there. It was originally the New Zealand Climate Laboratory, and then it changed to the Controlled Environment Laboratory.
Right.
So they had these different conditions and looked at the effects of, you know, seeds, plants. And though it's been closed for a little while, the work that it done is still being felt. And on October 17th, we have a talk in the gallery at 12:30. It's a panel, actually, a panel of local scientists who are going to talk about how the controlled environment laboratories work still influences the work that they're doing today.
Wow.
And previously we've had talks about the how it influenced how its work on climate sort of helped us today to sort of get a greater understanding of things like, you know, climate change and its effect on the effect that it will have on New Zealand agriculture and horticulture. So the talk is sort of aimed at just reinforcing the immediacy and also but at the same time the sort of the legacy of this science centre that was just sort of quietly doing its thing in a corner of Palmerston North.
Wow.
There's an accompanying book you can get in the shop, which is really fascinating because it's a book, but it's not a textbook or anything like that.
No,
it's just got lots of photos and primary documents and diagrams.
And what's the book called?
It's called Report on Progress.
Report on Progress.
Yeah, it's really, really fascinating sort of...
not an enticing title, but for anyone interested in the work that was being done back then and how that's relevant now, it sounds like a very, very useful book.
Yeah. It will certainly appeal to... I know it appeals to me because I like that kind of presentation, have a look at it.
For one of the Tim Manawa shows, perhaps do a remote control. I wander with my recording device and look at some of the stuff you've got available in the shop because it's quite extensive.
Yes, it is.
It's not just souvenir-type stuff.
That's right.
Which you first notice when you go to the counter. Behind the counter there are publications, all kinds of things, and also paraphernalia that's part of whatever big exhibition you've got going
on.
Yes,
And we make an effort to stock New Zealand-made products and even locally made things. We have some cushions there that are done by a locally. It's a collaboration between a textile artist and a painter.
Mm.
Like her paintings appear on the cushions, and that they're really nice.
Right. Oh, that's good to know. So it's really promoting because people over the summer. A lot of people I know. I have visitors from overseas who will be coming to see me in the summer, and if they're coming to stay. People want to be able to bring their visitors through to have a look at what's happening at Te Manawa. We've just about wrapped up, and unless you've got something else that will wait until next week, next week's Te Manawa show, we may have to say goodbye.
Okay.
Shall we?
Okay, then. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Hope this talk has provided some insight into the workings of Te Manawa and the things that we aim to do and the things that we strive for. And we'll catch you next time.
Next time, this is Rachel Ray saying goodbye to Rob Milden from the communications team at Te Manawa. And until next Monday at 12. Bye for now.
support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.